This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
I'm your first Bad Ideas host, and my name is Gabriel Urbina.
I am your second Bad Ideas co-host. My name is Sarah Shackett.
And I am your third No Bad Ideas co-host, Zach Valenti. And today we are joined by none other than the magnificent Emma Scherzarko.
Oh my gosh.
It's such a joy to have you in the studio.
I'm blushing. It's such a joy to be here. Oh my gosh. It's just like old times, except new and different.
Yeah. So let's break down the magnificence of Scherzarko.
Oh,
so Emma, you are you're an actor, a
voice
performer,
actor extraordinaire.
I would put
podcaster.
Air quotes over all of this. Uh-huh.
Starred in a little series called Wolf 359, which none of us know anything about,
great acclaim.
It's great.
Yeah. You know, you guys should check it out sometime.
And now you run your own podcast, pairing podcast.
I do. Yes, or I at least attempt to. But yeah, no, it's been super fun, and all of you were vital to making it happen and helping me get it started and also being guests on it.
Yeah. Which was so much fun.
Yeah. And hopefully guests again in the future.
We will have to do more.
And in this podcast, so my other secret identity is my other secret identity, as opposed to the other secret identity I just told you about, is that I work in the wine industry and have done so for many years and ostensibly know a fair amount about wine. And
ostensibly,
so,
I love that.
Ostensibly. And so I had this idea a while ago about starting a podcast pairing wine with art and pop culture, because these are all the things that I love. And it's been really fun. And yeah, and I'm just thrilled that it's going. It's been going for like a year and a half now.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Emma, if those are your secret identities, what is your
public-facing
identity?
My public-facing identity, you know, Tsar of Russia.
Oh, very good, very good, very good.
I'm excited for the miniseries about you that's coming out in a couple weeks.
Oh, my God. Sidebar, have you guys seen the, what's it called, The Last Tsars on Netflix?
We have not.
It is bad.
Speaking of bad ideas. It's real bad.
We're diving right into the hot takes here on No Bad Ideas.
Well, it's,
or perhaps the ice cold takes if it's about the Tsars.
Well, so it's one of those shows.
You're welcome, Zach. You're welcome. I'm here
for you. It was on the tip of your tongue, I could tell. But it's one of those shows where they blend documentary with dramatization.
Always good.
But they don't start very well. Yeah, they don't start inserting the dramatization until like 15 minutes in.
I thought
it was just a documentary, and I was like, this is interesting, like about the fall of the Romanovs. Like, that's cool. But then they start
the channel?
Yeah, exactly. But
Vandersnatch is
Winston,
real.
Winston, my husband, is a huge history nerd, and so really wanted to watch it, and I was like, absolutely not. You're not allowed to watch this while I'm conscious and in present. Anyway, sorry. That was
one bad idea.
Yeah, that was one bad idea. Yeah. I don't know. I think it would be a pretty easy fix to make that a good idea.
Just split it into two, like, you know, yeah. Do the documentary or do the live action or both, but or the dramatization rather.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's talk about what we're here to do, aside from marveling at bad ideas that other people have had. So this is the show where we take the worst ideas that people have ever found and try to see if we can, under the pressure of a timer, figure out how we might turn them into the pitch for a good idea, or at least a good idea for a story, whether that's a book or a film or a TV show or like a comic strip that somebody just
to be
like,
determined,
you know, scratched onto a wall somewhere.
Yeah.
If it's
we just see
narrative form,
we see how it feels.
Fair game.
Yes.
Is interpretive dance up
highly for... encouraged? Okay, highly great. Encouraged. Great.
Narrative form.
There we go.
It's
gonna go really well on a podcast.
Right.
No, but see,
you just have to keep it nonverbal and dance loudly.
See, okay. but I'm laughing because I know what the first bad idea is, and none of you don't, and I'm be so excited for the interpretive dance retelling of this idea.
Okay.
There's no way that the reflection of the laptop screen in your eyes is purely, there's also some evil glint.
There is an evil glint. It's real.
So let's dive into the first bad idea, which none of you have heard. And after I'm done reading it, then you guys are going to have 15 minutes to try to turn this into a good story. Are you ready? Are you excited?
Gulp.
Yes, that's what I like to hear.
Gulp indeed.
All right. So from NPR News, the headline reads, I am Darth Vader and I approve this message.
Excellent.
Wow. This is a story.
It's off to a great start.
This is a story from
2020. I thought we weren't going
No,
back.
This is a story from 2014, but that I think is very, very relevant to the current issues in the world.
Okay.
So Ukraine's presidential election season took an interesting turn over the weekend as Darth Vader declared his candidacy for the nation's highest office, promising that he knows what it takes to rebuild an empire. Quote,
Ukraine has never been an empire. Let's continue.
Quote, I alone can make an empire out of a republic to restore former glory.
I don't think
glory
he alone can do that.
To return lost territories.
I think that's been done before.
And pride to this country, said Vader, according to Agence France-Presse.
Oh, boy.
Vader, or at least someone wearing a costume of the Star Wars character, has filed paperwork with the Central Election Commission to make his candidacy official for Ukraine's presidential election slated for May 25th.
I really like that they specified that it was someone in a Vader costume.
Oh, yeah, no.
So good.
Or at least someone in.
NPR, like, we don't know nothing if not fastidious.
Right.
We neither confirm nor deny.
Wait, had the Disney purchase gone through in
2014? I believe so.
Yes,
I believe
so. Then Mickey's got to approve this.
Yeah.
This guy definitely has a cease and desist in his Ukrainian PO box. Absolutely. Go on.
Yep.
As he announced his run Saturday, Vader was flanked by the Royal Guard. As is often the case, several Imperial stormtroopers were also nearby as the Sith Lord spoke, wearing his trademark black helmet and cape. By the way, guys, there's going to be a link to the article in the description.
Oh, yeah, I want to see the picture.
Highly, highly recommended for the photos.
Oh, my gosh.
And then a sign that he might be more skilled in coalition building than has been recognized, Vader's news conference included another Star Wars character, frequent enemy, Chewbacca.
Oh, my God.
It's not the first time Vader has ventured into the public sphere in Ukraine. Last fall, he took a squad of stormtroopers to Ukraine's Ministry of Justice to deliver his party's charter. They were blocked at the door. And in 2011...
What was the name of his party?
The article does not specify.
Okay.
And in 2011, he sought land that could be used as a landing pad for a space cruiser in the port city of Odessa. He was inspired to make the move, he said, after noticing that several officials had, quote, switched to the dark side. I am Darth Vader, the right hand of Emperor Palpatine, he told police at a government building, the Reuters reported. A YouTube video of Vader's outing was set to the Imperial March.
Also copyrighted.
In what was probably a wise move, the request seemed to have been denied. Vader later proclaimed himself Odessa's new mayor. Vader isn't the only presidential candidate in Ukraine with a tie-in movie. Front runner Petro Poroshenko, a billionaire who's built his fortune in the confections industry, is known by the nickname Willy Wonka. So that's the end of the article, but I do just want to show you guys. The Vader squad.
I like the attention to detail that
photo.
You have the like Imperial Guard and stormtroopers.
Oh yeah, no, they went all out.
My God!
And again, listeners at home, really worth clicking on the link.
Is Chewbacca in handcuffs?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think that may just be
the photo.
Yeah,
I see.
Yes. All right. Somebody in a Vader outfit first declaring themselves mayor of a city and then running for president. Let's see. Let's see. 15 minutes on the clock starting.
I really think they should hold national office. Never mind.
I mean, I think this one just writes itself, guys.
Here's the problem that
tell us more, please.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I just need to get this out of my head, as often happens. You just have like a sickness that needs to leave.
Yes.
And the sickness, have you guys ever heard of Vermin Supreme?
No.
Vermin Supreme is a person who has run for the president of these United States.
Of these United
these
States?
Ones.
So it's not something on a Kentucky Fried Chicken menu?
No. For like the past, I think like three cycles.
Uh-huh.
And it is, Google him later.
Okay.
You'll thank me.
Okay.
All right.
But it's just this wild man with like a bucket hat. Who is basically the emperor of the universe, but is also running for president.
This is starting to sound familiar.
So it's comforting to me that like this is a trend like internationally of like overlords
who insert
themselves into politics.
And there was someone in one of the recent UK prime minister elections that was like Lord Bucket.
Yeah. Lord Bucket. Lord Bucket is also amazing.
That's right.
Yes. So
wow.
No. So this is like the space fascist costumed person running for president trend.
Yes.
It's real.
Is alive and well in the 21st century.
I just got a flash of the biggest meeting room in the UN filled with evil villain leaders that have taken control of their countries.
It's chaired by Bad Horse.
But like Comic-Con level costumes.
Right.
And not as a joke.
I think it's like the greatest crossover that's ever happened, you know, like
move over Endgame.
Yeah, right.
What I do love
evil
about
overlords assemble.
What I do love about this though is the point that they make of like, no, look, he's really trying to like present himself as a coalition builder.
Including
Chewbacca and his entourage.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's really a sign of like how far he's come, you know, like, level. And
he's left behind those youthful indiscretions and he's ready to really serve now.
Yes.
Or
yeah,
is it what
yeah.
you can get a Wookiee to do if you hold his planet hostage?
Ooh.
I mean,
this
is strong
Darth
leader, Zach.
Vader
You make good points. You make good points, Zach.
So I just want to sort of paint a couple of directions that I'm curious what you might be more interested in.
In your remaining 12 minutes.
Okay.
Is there the, so I see, one path down these woods is the very literal path where this is actually the Darth Vader and we will get the rights later.
Right.
That is sort of like time traveled to now and from
survived
the,
death and then, came back from death. And
then there's sort of the like, you know, sort of jokier angle of like people that are sort of delusional and doing this or people that are doing this. And then the question
is, it sounds like this is an act of satire from the way that he has like talked to, like,
I'm pretty sure that it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's interesting as well. Although I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I think you were taking and running with the baton of the sort of more satirical route. I guess I'm curious where your inclinations lie.
I don't know. I could see it going either way because I think the satirical route is almost more literal in some ways or closer to where we are in the world. Though I think you said the more literal and I'm just contradicting that.
But you know
what I mean.
Can I just clarify the terminology?
Yes.
So we have kind of behind door number one marked literal door.
Yeah, yes.
Darth Vader, within the reality of the Star Wars universe, the character exists.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one day that character, Anakin Skywalker, he wakes up and he is in the real world through some act of magic and decides to run for president. But it is genuinely the character from the movie universe transplanted into the real world.
Making the best of a bad draw.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And then sort of door number two marked satirical is this is somebody that is trying to raise awareness of something or other in a system of government that they're not happy with. And they decide to do that by dressing up as Darth Vader and kind of running a mockery of a campaign.
Yeah.
Right. That may go super successfully. Sure. In sort of a surprising 2016, 2017, 2018 sort of a way.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
I struggle with that, though, because, like, the actual honest-to-goodness president of Ukraine was a comedian.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who ran as an outsider and ran on an anti-corruption platform of, like, our government is a joke. Let me run it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to mention that.
And you have movies. I'm blanking on titles right now, but there's the Robin Williams one. Mm-hmm. There's the Chris Rock one. Like, there's a bunch where it's just like a person who does not have, like, the you know, sort of runs as a joke or runs to expose things and ends up winning.
If I may, I see a third possibility, which is the possibility of someone not doing this as satire, but believing that they are Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, that's the delusional one.
Yeah. And
Door number three.
Mm-hmm. The delusional door. I think I'm a little more interested in either the literal or the delusional than the satirical.
Go ahead.
There was a man, like a real historical person that lived around the time of Mark Twain, wasn't there? That like had himself declared like Emperor of America.
I believe so.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah. I mean,
Aaron Burr wanted to do that.
It's
happened today.
Sure.
Yep. I don't know. I see the story.
Can I make an adjustment of it not being... I like the delusional angle. Mm-hmm. Let's have it not be run for president of the United States.
Sure.
I think there could be something really interesting and a really interesting sort of tension in you have someone who really sort of fanishly has become like a Darth Vader or a villain type character.
Yeah.
And it's someone who has had something very tragic happen to them. And so people are very understanding of it, but then they try to like take over Galaxy's Edge. And so how
same
far
like Galaxy's Edge, like the
that's
park?
The new theme park. So like how far do the actors who are and like the Disney company who are like trying to facilitate people's fantasies and dreams allow someone to go when they really do think they're Darth Vader?
Yeah. It remind you know what it reminds me of is like people who believe or want to believe that they're vampires. And so like sleep in coffins
and get like surgical teeth.
Yeah, and like horns and stuff.
Right.
And
like bleach themselves.
Yeah. And so this person, that's intriguing to me.
Yeah, because I've just read a bunch of like AMAs on Reddit with people who have worked in Disney parks and about like the level of intensity of like once you cross a line, you're that character and you cannot act out of character.
Right.
And at what point does the line get crossed? And does this person, you know, really believe that they have the force, you know, and a real lightsaber?
And what I'm struggling to reconcile is just kind of what incentive would the people at the park have to not immediately
like
get rid of this
person.
Yeah.
Right.
Like sort of like what is the angle where there is an element of kind of like, ooh, we know that this is wrong, but let's keep going just a little longer. And, you know, like... maybe if we just let it run for another 5 hours.
Yeah. Or like let's try and de-escalate it in character as opposed to
Just like immediately calling
and
the cops.
I don't have an immediate answer for that.
Well, what if the other actors at the theme park also had these stories of wanting, you know, whoever is Luke and Leia and Chewbacca, they all have this like inner desire to be the characters that they play. And so they see it could be this kind of interesting interplay between reality and fantasy of what is real and the kind of collectively and maybe like one of the actors is like, no, fuck this, like
right.
And see, like if we were gonna do that, I would sort of I think like want to kick it up a notch into like Jumanji territory you know, they find like an enchanted Star Wars, like those like VHS games or something that takes them and turns them into the characters.
Yeah,
What were you going to say, Sarah?
I was going to go down like sort of a different path.
Let's
like,
go.
You know, like I was going to go down like a sort of make a wish kind of a path.
Oh,
interesting.
Of just like, this is someone who their instruction for today is to give this person the experience of like a lifetime.
Hmm.
But then it sort of spirals.
Oh,
I see.
I like that.
Right. Yeah. Because it's fine when it's in the park and everybody's insured. The second you take it out into the parking lot, you have a problem.
Right.
Ooh, but no. I can see by your hesitant expression that you are still wondering, like, okay, but why after 5 minutes do they not call the cops?
Especially, I buy it a lot more if it's like we're shutting down the park and they're the only person that is not a cast member there.
Mm.
I'm just kind of like thinking
about... I think it's a possibility. And you know, this person who ends up being like a Darth Vader figure could like be really good at being a Darth Vader figure, and mm-hmm. suddenly yeah. like some of the people in Stormtrooper outfits are like, yeah, with him.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, totally.
And so like it could get out of control, you know.
Right,
yeah.
right, right.
Yeah.
You know, like they stop answering to their manager or whatever, yeah. you know.
Yeah. Well, and I don't
and
think
and you know, one person's kind of like going like, "Bob, come on." The person is like, "My name is FN564 or whatever, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
you know."
Well, you know, to me, I like this idea. I like this a lot, and it also reminds me of, you know, just like how sociopaths work. You know, you don't yeah. immediately realize the most of the time that they have this illness, and many sociopaths are so charismatic. So maybe this Darth Vader person, you know, starts off cool and whether it's a make a wish kind of thing or they just like him and are drawn to him or them, we don't have to gender them,
yeah.
but, and then slowly but surely we start seeing like signs of darkness or like creepiness in their Darth Vader behaviorness.
And that way you really could say something about like politics,
yeah.
but it's abstracted out from
yes.
like the sort of baggage and the cliches of a campaign.
Agreed, yeah. agreed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I kinda like that.
Okay, so let's recap. Like let's kind of like
yeah.
put together
yes.
these
yeah.
like various strands
yes.
that we are
mm-hmm.
working
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a Star Wars themed park, whether it is Galaxy's Edge
or
something that
one.
Is less copyrighted.
Yes.
Although Disney, call us.
Yeah, and then and maybe it is sort of that like Galaxy Quest style,
mm-hmm.
very clearly identifiable Star Trek, but not actually like the character names, like, you know, sort of something that is
yes.
just yeah, one level remove.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then one day there is someone, and I'm guessing I have to admit, I'm not familiar with how Make-A-Wish works. Is it only for children?
It's only for children.
Yes.
But we could, in our abstracted world out, like make it like a teenager or have it be like the parent of a child or just have it be
yeah.
like a rich person who
yeah.
buys out the park for the day or
yeah.
something.
Sure.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
that's quite realistic.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. So whoever they are, someone that has ostensibly a limited amount of time on
mm-hmm.
the earth
mm-hmm.
and sort of wants to do this big, final thing where they will finally kind of like really connect with this character who they've always really felt a calling card to.
Yeah.
Obviously Darth Vader.
Obviously
yeah.
Darth
obviously.
Vader.
Obviously.
Yes. And so everyone at the park is a little bit at first kind of like, well, this is like a little eccentric, but, you know, well,
yeah.
whatever. We're getting
we're being paid.
Yeah, we're being paid like quadruple
yeah.
overtime
yeah.
and, you know, and it's only one day. So.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And so then the person shows up and they are really like in character from
mm-hmm.
the get go. Right.
Yeah.
And they sort of suddenly like, you know, prove themselves to be, and maybe there's even like a little bit of kind of before they get there, everyone at the park is kind of going like, this fucking person doesn't know like what they're getting into. Like, you know, like this part, you know, like Frank, our like main Darth Vader, he knows what he's doing. He makes it look easy, but it's really not. Like, it's a tough role. This is going to be a shit show. They're not going to be able to do it. But then the person shows up and they're all immediately like, whoa,
oh,
no,
fuck.
This,
yeah.
this is a different damn. Level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
was that time?
Unfortunately, that was time. Yeah.
So that's where it ends.
So that's the cliffhanger.
That's the concept.
Yeah, that's the basic
and then
idea.
It all spirals from there.
Yeah.
Right. And then it sort of like becomes kind of them inciting this revolution more or less amongst the park workers.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah.
I'd watch that.
I like that.
I would watch that.
Yeah.
I'm going to pitch as a reality series.
Yes.
We just need the park for 16 weeks. Come on, Disney.
Yeah.
Let's think about that some more and then be right back for another bad idea.
Hello, everybody. Zach Valenti jumping into the episode with a quick announcement just for you. Did you love Wolf 359? Do you love audio fiction storytelling in general? If so, you're going to love Zero Hours, the new podcast Gabrielle, Sarah, and myself are putting together just for you. It's going to be a 7-episode limited run audio fiction miniseries featuring 7 stories from the ends of the world. The cast is redonkulous, if I do say so myself, and the writing is just insane. Cannot wait to share this epic, epic miniseries with y'all. To learn more, you can check out ZeroHoursPodcast.com. Sign up for our sweet, sweet behind-the-scenes newsletter. Check out our Twitter, and you can even give us a coffee, which we sorely, sorely need to stay awake to get this finished by the time we launch later this month. Once more, you can learn more about Zero Hours Podcast at ZeroHoursPodcast.com. And now, back to the show.
And we are back with yet another No Bad Idea with the lovely Emma Shirjarko.
I thought you were going to say with yet another Emma Shirjarko.
We've made a new one.
Yeah.
If we had that technology, our lives would be so much better.
So would mine. As long as I can like inhabit the identity of all of my clones.
You can finally have one dedicated Emma per identity.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so
like we mentioned.
Well, that is a good idea, potentially. But I'm about to share a bad one.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
This comes from the Huffington Post's weird news section.
All right.
Love it.
And I hope y'all are a fan of rock and roll. Because Hell Kiss... Yeah. makes a big splash by performing concert for sharks.
Nice.
Wait a minute.
Singer and guitarist.
Hang on a second.
Yeah,
this is
wait.
so metal.
This is the most metal thing I've ever heard.
Well,
wait, this is so unnecessarily metal.
Oh, there's a twist.
Tell me, PETA.
Metal.
Singer and guitarist Paul Stanley told the Associated Press, quote, "Since we're going to be in Australia, it gives a whole new meaning to doing
fuck.
A concert down,
down
under."
Oh my
God. And this article and a delightful picture of Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley will be linked in the description.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
no, wait a minute. Like, this is something that they're planning? This is something that already happened?
This is something that I think will be happening when this episode is released.
Oh my God.
We gotta time it right.
Gotta do it right.
Let me read you the article. Having played nearly every corner of the earth in a nearly 50-year career.
Shit.
Yeah. The rock band Kiss is taking its show to a new place under the sea where they will perform for great white sharks and 8 fans. What? Separated from them. Wait for it. By a small submarine.
Oh my God.
What the hell? So I'm about to explain.
Are you though?
Guys.
Okay.
This is all a promotion by Airbnb.
Really?
You know, Sarah,
I was gonna rag this. I was about to be like, where's the bad idea though? There's the bad idea.
This is where it is.
Marketing ploy.
The fans and KISS will travel. Oh, it's November 18th in separate boats off the coast of Southern Australia. While KISS stays above board on one vessel.
Oh,
the
well,
fans,
that's lame.
The fans.
Yeah, never mind.
The fans will be lowered beneath the surface of the water from a second boat into a viewing sub in an area known for shark activity.
Wow.
Using underwater speakers, KISS will begin playing and the sound will be audible to the submerged fans and the sharks. Quote, I was a little
too... They're all gonna die!
Oh my God.
I was a little taken aback by it, but they explained that sharks are attracted to low frequencies, and so they're attracted to rock and roll.
No! So, like, shark neuroscientists are like, how can we make them more feeding friends?
Yeah.
Singer and guitarist Paul Stanley told the Associated Press, quote, since we're going to be in Australia, it gives a whole new meaning to doing a concert out and under. The first come, first served event costs $50. Such a bargain.
Wow.
It's half the price of KISS tickets in the worst nosebleed seats in the last row of Madison Square Garden.
I was about to say.
It's more expensive to charter a fucking submarine.
Yeah.
Proceeds will go to charity, the company said. Reservations can be made at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All $400.
On Airbnb.com/KISS on October 14th. So
one moment. I have an unrelated thing I need to do on my phone.
Did they fly you out there, though?
I don't know. The event will take place in the Indian Ocean off Port Lincoln, South Australia. KISS will be in full makeup and costume for the performance. Which
they better
will
be.
At least four songs. Quote,
at least four?
At least four. I'm not sure how much of us sharks can take, Stanley said. I'm hoping they know rock and roll all night, like all good people should.
Oh my God.
Let's see. The event is part of, is the bad idea. The event is part of Airbnb Animal Experiences.
Is designed
to have people entertain animals instead of the other way around, the company said in a news release.
No.
We don't understand our languages.
Yeah.
As strange as it sounds, underwater concerts are not new. The Underwater Music Festival has been held for the past 35 years in the Florida Keys. The shark show has untapped potential if they want to do it again sometime. After all, what other concert could potentially bring together Great White and Air Supply? Thus ends the article.
The bad idea Hall of Fame articles involve sharks? Like, really, there's like a special category of no bad idea stories that involves sharks.
Oh my God.
Well, I'm putting 15 minutes on the clock. Rock and roll, guys.
All right.
Okay, so Seamless burns down the Amazon. To bring awareness to its food delivery services. I don't know. Like, how do you take this idea and make it less ridiculous? Like,
I think
we need to get rid of the Airbnb portion of it. I think that it needs to be more of a there's this band and they're probably, I'm kind of thinking people like Jack Black in like School of Rock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of kind of like, not necessarily like old dudes, but kind of someone, people that you're kind of look at them and you're like, you're a little too old to still be like really gunning for you know, rock and roll stardom. And you're like, you know, you don't quite have the physique for it anymore.
Right.
You're a little, and you clearly don't have the finances either. Like, you're living like you're 22, even though you're 39.
Right.
And you know, and like, you're not, you don't have a family, you're drinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
A band that is like that. They had like, you know, one album, 15 years ago, and since then they haven't done anything, and they're like, you know, scrounging for, you know, like, something that'll give them their edge back.
Yeah, a gig or something. Yeah,
and you know, and every one of and like maybe it's like five guys. And you know, and like four of them finally get to the point. Like everyone, maybe except the lead singer. Everyone is kind of like, you know, like, you know what? Like, I think it's time to like pack it in, and like, you know, like I've been meaning to take this job, and like, you know, you wanted to move back home to help take care of your dad.
I've got four kids.
Yeah. And then, you know, and like they're all like, yeah, well, we better tell, you know, we better tell Billy Ray. And then at that moment, like, you know, like door slams open and Billy Ray walks in, and Billy Ray's like, fucking shark show. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, you know, it'll be this big publicity stunt, and it sounds so fucking metal, and like we're gonna do this, and it's gonna be outrageous, it's gonna be amazing. And I think that like everyone else kind of does it, and everyone else is like, we're willing to do one last really stupid thing for Billy Ray. And then we need to tell him that like this band is over. And then it's kind of this whole thing about like, you know, like, is Billy Ray going to find out that everyone else is kind of done with the band? Or is everyone else going to get like swept back into it and like really fall in love with it again?
Yeah.
What's going to happen as they do this like deeply, deeply stupid? And I think that it needs to be more dangerous than the thing
absolutely.
That Kiss is doing.
Yeah.
Right,
Kiss is doing
also, they have to play it
safe.
Underwater. Like,
yeah.
100%.
Right. Like, it needs to sort of be kind of something that is actually like a risk of life and limb.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Deep Blue Sea esque, you know, like
right.
Also one of my favorite films of all time.
And at the end of the movie, like the band is still together, but now two of them are missing limbs from the mauling that they got. You know.
Yeah. Now, are they playing music on sharks or to sharks?
Unclear. I think that.
Like maybe like this scientist is like, I've created this sedative to
where is the scientist from, Emma?
Transylvania. I don't know.
Continue.
They've created New Jersey and they want to seem interesting.
Yeah.
That's
I have created this sedative.
This is all happening at Trenton Labs in New Jersey.
Princeton freshmen all like trade back and forth. Like, don't take that class. You think that intro class is cool? Don't take
don't
it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, no.
Dr. Vadislav.
He's gonna make you try to ride a sleepy shark.
Shark would be so cranky.
Yeah.
Or really chilled out on shark ketamine.
Yeah.
See, now this is funny though, because it's a lot of kind of like, well, the big question is, how do you tell if the shark is sleepy or not? They don't close their eyes when they sleep. So you have to kind of just give it a try and see what happens.
I just want the cutaway scene in the credits where the doctor is like looking very serious and alone and like looking around. And he's alone. And he goes, baby shark, doo doo doo.
And this guy and this doctor obviously has to be a big fan.
Obviously.
They're one groupie.
My God.
But I think that there needs to be sort of some dynamic where like they had like their one album and then they had like the one song that they did for like a Gap commercial or something.
Yeah.
And
everybody still
loves that song. And they're all like, no, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
that was the sellout song.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah, that was the Metallica in the 90s song.
Yeah. So maybe this doctor is all about like, you know, their like Gap commercial song.
Yeah.
9 minutes.
Okay,
20.
Cool.
Okay,
you have plenty of time.
Great.
like, how far down a rabbit hole did we go?
Okay, so what are they doing for this doctor? The doctor has devised something?
Some sort of sedative that you know, or maybe like he you know, he's figured out something with sound frequencies and this sedative or drug or whatever that makes sharks calm or something. and
in order to ride them.
Yeah. Well, like as climate
shark riders.
Well, no, but here, but climate change is happening. So sharks are coming closer and closer to shore these days.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like to protect.
Yeah.
Yeah. To protect swimmers and like keep beaches going.
Yeah.
To have like, you know, this basically invisible fence to keep sharks out.
Of rock and roll.
Yeah.
But it's of rock and roll.
Yeah,
You know what it could be in tandem with all of that? Maybe it's happening at a nature preserve that is going out of money. And this is kind of like, even also for the nature preserve,
like their
a
last
big
shot.
Fundraiser thing.
Yeah.
And that way they can sort of have a little bit of contrast because the band is kind of in a lot of like, well, you know, this is our like last big thing. And the people that work there is kind of are kind of going, yeah, but like, guys, like, also, like, this is our last big thing. And, like, this is one that really matters because we're giving a habitat to these, you know, endangered creatures. Right. And, like, you know, like,
we're doing research that's not good. The government's not going to fund it.
Right.
Like, so, you know, we really need to have runway for like the next couple years.
And that way there's some stakes other than just like, how's Billy Ray going to take the news?
And that can be a nice counterpoint actually to like the band's selfishness of like, how do we make this as over the top as possible as a tribute to our friend versus the like, basically like press ranger who's assigned to them who just really wants to make this a success.
Of course, there needs to be constant conversation about Billy Ray wanting to do something and people being, that is literally you hopping on top of it. You are jumping the shark. Don't do that.
Yeah. No, literally. Many jumping the shark jokes in this film.
So here's the question. Does it then become like a movie about, you know, shark attacks? Or does it become an unlikely story of friendship between a shark and Billy Ray and a washed up old rock star?
I'm not sure, but I just realized that the band's name is Shark Attack, and that's why
this
is happening.
Oh, yeah, that's got it. Oh, that. Oh, perfect.
Gotta be.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. I kind of like the idea of it and ends up being like they find an unlikely friendship, you know, like Free Willy or something, but with a great white shark.
Oh, sorry, I'm just now
sharky.
This is a lot happening in this movie right now.
Now my brain is just like off in the scene where like, you know, like mid performance, Billy Ray gets actually attacked by a shark and someone is like, shark attack, shark attack. And the entire crowd is like, woo, shark attack.
It's gotta happen. Yeah. It's gotta happen.
But I mean, that's not the craziest thing because it sounds like we're going to have a group of four people who maybe they're in relationships with each other or they all have ties to the world that are pulling them away from this band, except for Billy Ray. And so if he just finds like that shark, like, you know, he thought it was about the music, but really it's about the sharks.
No, I think that there's a very real, like, World's End, like the Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg movie of kind of these four guys who have all clearly moved on. And then one guy that is, like, frozen in time circa 2002 when he released his one album with his band.
Yeah,
right.
And has had no other significant kind of developments in his life.
Right. Right. Yeah. Is his nickname Billy Stingray?
Oh. I love it. See?
Ouch.
It writes itself.
Yeah.
That stingray just rammed its tail through my heart.
Oh, well, no. In the 5 minutes you have remaining, friends, what are sort of some of the complications that arise in the planning of this insane concert?
Well, there's probably a like really put upon audio engineer that is kind of like,
oh God, yeah.
You want to do a show underwater? Yes.
Not like a submarine.
Yeah.
Underwater.
Yes.
Yeah.
With your electric guitars.
Yeah.
Yes. How?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. You figure it out. Ooh. And
who's playing this audio engineer?
We can come back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord.
Yeah.
Lord. But yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although that would be a really funny like side role for her.
Yeah, no, needless to say, like the movie is stacked with cameo appearances.
Oh, yeah.
Like the, you know, grumpy person that sells fish sticks is like, you know, Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
He would be the
grumpy fish. He would
be
boy.
So grumpy.
I think that there's a lot of kind of Spinal Tap kind of problems. And I think that there's sort of like also the major ongoing tension is kind of with the band sort of being like, you know, Billy Ray, you always sort of are telling us that we need to commit to the band. But in many ways, you aren't committing to the band because you aren't showing up on time for rehearsal.
Yeah,
you aren't, you know, like, you know, you're staying up all night drinking and smoking, mm-hmm. and then your voice is shot and you can't do things. And so there's kind of, you know, like there's probably a lot of kind of interpersonal tension.
And like finally getting this person to sort of accept responsibility.
Yes.
Because like Billy Ray probably has many, many theories about why the band hasn't gone. And probably none of them involve Billy Ray.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
No. And there can be sort of like, you know, a moment where the, you know, sort of grumpy head of the conservatory that is saddled with these people that is the voice of actual stakes. Maybe like, you know, like their bassist plays them.
It's gotta be the bassist.
Plays them a video of like the band 15 years ago. And they're like, holy shit, like, this is amazing. And like Billy Ray was like so fucking good. And the bassist is just kind of like, yeah. But like, you know, that was what natural talent got him at age 22. And since then, there's been nothing that he's done.
To even
preserve it, forget develop it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there has to be some sort of tension and climax between the band right before they're supposed to, you know.
For sure.
And so.
Oh, I think it's getting worked out while they're on the show.
And like they've got to play correctly too, right?
They've got to
get the notes right because certain notes will trigger the sharks.
there's got to be a training montage of them like riding sharks, or just practicing, you know, underwater first.
I think I've decided that the grumpy audio engineer should be Andrew Scott.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, that's great. That's a great choice.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's
just
good.
Like his dead cannot get any more pants.
Yeah.
You know. How much time do we have, Sarah?
That's a good question. You have 1 minute and 22 seconds.
What is this called?
Shark Attack.
No, it's the name of the band. Okay, what is the name of the film or the name of the story? I don't know. Is this a film? I think it is. We've been
thinking about it as a film.
I think it's a film. Either that or it's an opera.
But oh, of course, of course. Yeah, I mean, a rapra.
A rapra.
A rapra.
Shark rapra.
The Jaws of Destiny.
Great White.
Oh, that's good.
Jaws of Destiny is really good, actually.
Jaws of Destiny is really good. Yeah.
I don't know that it's quite. I feel like we can do better. I don't know.
Jumping the Shark.
Jumping the Shark.
No, that's pretty good.
I will come back to this.
Under the Sea.
Shark and Roll.
Yes. Ooh. There it is.
Shark core.
Love it.
Any last thoughts in the last 30 seconds?
I think that it ends with like, you know, like everybody gets a job, including Billy Ray.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then like Saturday nights, they all go play at like the local bar, three songs or whatever.
But the last scene of the movie is this lead singer character just forcing the shark to leave the captivity and go back into the wild.
It's totally gotta be the
mid credits.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it's gotta be. There's gotta be the shark friendship. That's all I care about.
But I'm glad we got to the shark friendship.
Maybe the sharks were the friends we made all along. Food for thought.
Indeed.
Let's think about that.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Creative Corner Chat that we don't get to do so often these days here at No Bad Ideas.
Here at the Triple C.
Creative
Corner Chat.
Creative. I feel like I should have like a mug of something.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yeah, we should stop the podcast and get some hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Get like a nice fire going.
I would like 5 marshmallows, please.
All right. Yeah.
Well, while we wait for the marshmallows, we would love to hear a little bit more about pairing and how you came up with the idea for it, Emma.
Yeah, thank you. So I went to Wesleyan, as you all did.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, what? I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Wesleyan?
Wesleyan.
Sorry. The traditional pronunciation of the Northeast Liberal Arts College, yes.
Oh my God. Now that I live...
In case anyone is really, really new to this and has not yet heard this, all 4 of us went to the same school, which is how we met each other. So that was fucking funny.
Yep. Though the only person...
we promise.
The only one of you I think I met when I was actually at Wesleyan was you, Gabrielle, because we took the British Romantic novel together.
That's right.
My junior, your freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah, in retrospect, I think
we were maybe in the same class, but didn't know each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach?
What class?
This was a Knights of the Round Table.
Days and Nights.
Days of the Arts.
Days and Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Was one of my favorite classes.
It was a great class.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Ariella Rotenberg, also cast member of Wolf 359,
the French version.
Yeah,
she was in the class. So
she and I would talk because she was reading all the same stuff, but in French, or at least like the Chrétien de Troyes. Yeah. Yeah, it was really
cool.
Yeah, it was
awesome. Because most of the Arthurian literature is in French.
Huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So.
Dang. Yeah. All right.
Yep. So there you go. But Zach, I don't think we crossed paths. I think I knew who you were. Like when we started Wolf, I was like, oh yeah, I think I know.
Yeah. I think we were in that place.
Yeah. But we'd never met. But yes. So I went to Wesleyan. I was a theater major and did a bunch of acting and, you know, eventually moved to New York to do the actor thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, this may shock many of you listeners, but it is very hard to make a living from acting.
Hard to believe, but true.
I know. It's crazy. But so that's why so many actors get jobs, waiting tables, usually working in restaurants. I really didn't want to do that.
Mm.
And I knew that I was really interested in wine. Like, my brother and his wife opened a wine store.
Hmm.
And so it was something that I was kind of casually interested in, from like sort of around the end of college to around this time that I lived in New York. And so when the time came to get a real job so that I could, you know, pay my rent and stuff.
Of course.
I decided to apply to this wine store on the Upper West Side. And I got the job, even though I didn't really know anything about wine. And that was where I started learning about wine. Since then, I have worked in, I think, 5 other wine stores, including the store that I worked in Boulder, Colorado, for a master sommelier. And I did pretty cool. And I did not know that it was owned by a master sommelier when I applied. But it was an amazing experience for me, you know, because normally you don't get that kind of access to like the education and resources unless you're working in a restaurant, like a high-end restaurant.
And just to break it down a little bit, what differentiates a master sommelier from a vanilla sommelier?
Well, a baby sommelier, as I call myself. Uh-huh. So with the court of master sommeliers, there are...
It's a court.
It is a court.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Wait,
it is...
Like a court.
I mean, it is called the Court of Master Sommeliers.
Oh,
I have not been to, you know, their headquarters.
Is this one of those sort of situations where the only way to become a master sommelier is if one of the ones that is already in dies? And
I wish.
Masked Lords of Waterdeep.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it should be.
Uh-huh, yes.
But mm-hmm. sadly, no. I think there are now like around 250-260 master sommeliers in the world.
Not like 250,000, but like 250-ish
250
period.
Period.
Wow.
Yes. It is incredibly difficult to do. And if you've seen the movie Som,
yeah,
that gives you some idea of what it takes, but it really is, you know, like getting a master's degree or even a PhD, the amount of study that you have to do. And then on top of that, the service and the tasting aspect of things. And part of the reason why I haven't pursued past my intro level is that I'm not really interested in the service aspect because, as I mentioned, I don't really like working in restaurants or I don't really want to work in restaurants. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's this incredible. So I guess I should take a step back and talk about what interests me about wine and what really got me into wine beyond the fact that it tastes good, you know, and yeah. I like to drink it, is it really helps me understand the world better in a way. And I really do feel like wine and the history and culture of winemaking, depending on where you are, tells you a lot about the history and culture. Especially in Europe, but elsewhere as well. And there's a whole lot of privilege and wealth tied up with wine culture. And that is the part of it that I really don't like. And would if I could leave any mark on the wine industry, it would be to make wine and wine education more accessible to everybody. Mm. Because, you know, like in parts of Europe, it's just like part of life, you know, like. A bottle costs like a euro and it's good. And it's not this, like, it doesn't
fancy thing.
Yeah. It doesn't always have this connotation of being so fancy. It's just part of life. And so that's what really interests me. And that's why I wanted to start pairing, is because I feel like podcasts are a great way, you know, obviously there's a certain level of a limit to accessibility, because, you know, you have to have access to either a phone or computer or internet, et cetera, et cetera.
But compared to, say, the experience of traveling to a vineyard.
Right.
It exactly. is definitely more accessible for the majority of people.
Exactly.
And feels probably a little bit more culturally accessible than, like, I'm going to decide that I am going to drink wine now.
I hope so. And, you know, because lots of people ask me, you know, I'm going to this tasting room, I'm going to this vineyard, like, what's the etiquette?
Uh-huh.
And I haven't
thought about vineyard etiquette.
Yeah, too. I know. You know, they're like, you know, do I drink the wine? Do I spit it? What should I wear? It's like all these. People have
all
asked
white.
Me.
Yeah. All white,
all
obviously.
White,
yes.
All white when you go, especially
no
after Labor Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's always been my interest in it, and it's been really fun and rewarding making pairing, you know, I mean, also challenging at times. I am not like an adept audio engineer, and so I've been doing my best to make it sound good, which takes a lot more work than you might think it does, and it doesn't even sound that good.
But it sounds plenty good.
Thank you. But yeah. So it's been a really good learning experience for me, getting some of those tools and skills as well, and just being able to talk to people about things that we love, but in a different context. And I think I've always been a person who likes intersections, and like mixed media, and thinking about things in a different framework that like gets my creative juices flowing.
Which I think leads us to kind of the other half of pairing, the sort of non-wine
exactly
part of it,
which I would say is more even than a half. I would say like the majority of pairing is talking about art and pop culture and like things that we love and are interesting to us. So for example, for those of you who haven't listened to Pairing yet, Sarah and I do an episode about Battlestar Galactica.
Yep.
Gabrielle and I talk about His Dark Materials.
We did.
Zach and I have a planned episode, which we have to do.
Can we get any hints?
Maybe.
Tell us later.
We'll tell you later.
Yeah,
But and then all three of you came on for one of my Harry Potter episodes.
Yeah, that's right.
I did an episode for each Harry Potter book. And I started the whole series out with this series called Middle Earth and Old World Wines. Mm-hmm. And I talked about The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, because if you know anything about me, you know that I love Tolkien. And
it's come up once or twice.
I don't think we've ever talked about
it. No, Sarah and I have definitely never discussed it.
I also like Tolkien.
So I worked really hard on those episodes, and I did a lot of planning for them, and those were really more integrated, the talking about the books and the movies to a certain extent alongside wine.
Yeah.
And I paired a different wine region with every place that they go in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and I gave every character a great pairing. Since then, I have loosened up a lot, mm-hmm. and kind of let the conversation carry itself, and I'll have a few wine ideas that I'll throw in, but the wine has mostly taken a back seat, except for certain episodes where I do the opposite and I'll talk about wine and a wine concept, and I'll try to get Winston, my husband and often co-host, or whoever is with me, to like pair something, you know, something in art.
Yeah.
For example, we just did an episode about Italian white wine, of which there is a lot to talk about. And my idea was that we would pair the different white wines with like different Italian Renaissance artists.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
It turned into mostly Ninja Turtles.
That's fair.
That's the idea behind pairing, and it's been really fun, and I've been really enjoying getting feedback from listeners, you know, saying like, you know, that this has really helped them learn about wine in a fun and more accessible way, more relatable way.
Good.
I think, because there's tons of wine podcasts out there, and if you really want to learn about wine, there's many that I would recommend to you more than mine. But but if you want to like get a little bit of information that will give you a little confidence going into a wine store or ordering wine at a restaurant, or, you know, get you excited to try something new, and all through the context of something that you might feel a little bit more relatable. That's pairing. And that's,
no, and I'll tell you, one of the things that I really love about the style that you bring to the way that you talk about wine and pairing, and I remember sort of thinking about this while we were recording the His Dark Materials episode, that you were sort of bringing in a lot of information that is never the kind of thing that I would think about wine.
Yeah.
But is absolutely kind of a part of it, and a part of what makes it sort of really, really interesting.
Right.
Kind of things about all these, you know, dramas and feuds and differences of opinions between makers of wine.
Oh, yeah.
Differences of opinion about kind of how things should be made, or different processes. And just kind of all these things that made me kind of go like, oh, wow, like there's this whole facet of this aside from just, say, flavor profiles kind of, you know, like bottling years, or all these things that I think are the things that immediately come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like we had in the past, Mike Schubert was one of our guests for a previous episode of No Bad Ideas. Yeah. Yes, yes.
He has also been on a couple episodes of pairing.
And he does a podcast called Horse, where the gimmick is kind of, it's all the things about the NBA and about kind of basketball other than the results of games.
Right.
And I remember sort of thinking kind of like, oh, this is a little bit of kind of like playing in the horse realms of kind of going, don't be intimidated by, you don't know kind of like everything that there is to know about the statistics of the Timberwolves.
Right.
You can jump in and kind of get involved in all these like more immediate and more kind of, you know, all these side avenues, all these like wide things about the world of wine.
Absolutely. And it's funny hearing you talk about that. I do think that there are many similarities between I think the podcasts are very different themselves,
yeah. Yeah,
but between the idea of pairing and the idea of horse, it's kind of a similar similar desire.
I think. Yeah,
that you don't have to get this correct. You don't have to be right about it. There isn't a right answer, but there are many, many stories and many, many ways into it, which is one of the things I like about both of those shows.
Well, thank you.
And I'm curious if that sort of links into, Emma, what you mentioned earlier, that wine helps you see the world. And I'm curious, if you can, go into a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Absolutely. Well, on a very basic level, this is embarrassing, but I'm really bad at geography and I'm really bad at remembering where places are in the world that are not where I am or have been and known intimately. And because I have studied wine and wine regions and I know where those are for the most part, hopefully, that helps me kind of put geography into context. And if you understand geography, I think it really helps. It really helps understand. And I see all these. Okay, here's an example. This is one of my favorite kind of weird anecdotes. But there's this grape called Vermentino. It's a white grape. It's grown pretty widely now, but it's most known in Sardinia, in the island of Sardinia.
Okay.
It is also found in other parts of Italy, and one of the more notable regions for it is in Piedmont, which is kind of northwest Italy. But there they call it Favorita.
Oh.
And they call it that because it was the favorite grape of the king of Piedmont, Sardinia, which I did not realize was a thing.
Yeah.
There's this weird connection that you can see because this grape is in these two places, and just digging into the etymology and the history of how that happened, and the fact that it still is there now is fascinating to me. And I think I've always kind of struggled with history and geography. I kind of get bored if it's too dry, I guess. And this is a way that it is interesting to me to think about it in the context of this grape, you can find it in these two places. What's the story of how it got to the second place?
Right.
You know, and what's the relationship between these two places that made that happen?
Yeah.
So that's what's that's sort of what I meant about how it helps me understand the world better.
That makes all the sense.
And just one other thing that I was thinking of when you were talking, Gabrielle, just now, that I wanted to mention is that winemaking is both a science and an art. And most winemakers, I would say, probably consider themselves one or the other, or some mixture of the two, but I would say more heavily leaning towards artists.
Right. There's probably one side that calls more to them than the other.
Yes. Hmm. And also, so my old boss, who is a master sommelier, he is just incredibly intelligent and knows an astounding amount of information about wine. He's a master. He worked very, very hard to get there. But the way he thinks and talks about wine is very scientific. I feel he can tell me the exact breakdown and history and soil type and all this stuff, which for me, for my brain, that's kind of secondary to me about wine. But I had this other coworker who technically was not a certified sommelier, but he'd been working in the industry for 30 years. And he had this beautiful way of talking about wine that I'd never heard anybody else talk about wine this way before. And it was almost poetic. He would talk about it in emotional terms. You know, he would talk about not exactly how the wine tasted, but how it would make you feel. And I loved looking at the dynamic between the two of them and this different way that they both incredibly knowledgeable, both incredibly intelligent people who just thought about things in a different way. And I felt like I see all these parallels between people in the wine industry and people in primarily theater, since that's the primary mode that I've worked in for acting. And don't get me started on the relationship between restaurants and theater, because I think they're exactly different,
that's
the
a different
same.
Episode. Different episode.
That's where we can complain about Sweet Bitter. But
nice.
but
I don't know what you're talking about, and I have no strong feelings about.
No, I haven't heard them.
Any of that.
Yep.
Mess.
Yep. Nope. Not at all. But yeah. So that's the. Those are kind of my convoluted thoughts about how I kind of got so into wine and so interested in it, and why I really enjoy making pairing. I hope some people enjoy listening to it. I very much do, but it's just been a lovely thing for me to do.
Alrighty. I think that may be the time that we have today. But Emma, thank you much for sharing all of that and for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a delight.
Where can people hear more of your awesome, awesome shows and your beautiful, beautiful voice?
Oh my goodness. Well, I don't know about where you can hear my beautiful, beautiful voice, but you can hear my voice.
Come now.
Hey.
I know that you are not arguing anything about the awesome, awesome shows. So where can people see more of your work, Emma?
So there's a few places. Obviously, this little show called Wolf 359. You can hear me occasionally.
Wolf359.fm. www.wolf359.fm.
So you can listen to Pairing. It's available on all podcast platforms. Pairing. It's just Pairing. If you search for it, we're on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Facebook at Pairing Podcast.
Cool.
Our website is thepairingpodcast.com.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. My personal website is emmascherzarco.com, no hyphen.
Okay.
That's emmascherzarko.com.
Excellent.
There will be, hopefully a link or something.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll make that happen.
My name is difficult, but I like to challenge people.
but I believe that it is also your name. Like there are no other Emma Scherzarkos.
I believe the only other Scherzarko in the world is my brother.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
That's tremendous.
And he may be changing his name.
But probably not to Emma.
Probably not to Emma.
Okay,
no.
Cool.
So
keep us posted though.
Also, I don't know if he actually will, but
regardless, he won't get your domain.
Yeah, no, my domain is mine. I pay for that. So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Great Dilemma.
Nice.
And Tumblr, my Tumblr, which I post on infrequently, but you can like see pictures of my cats and stuff.
Very important.
Amateur Jarko.
Excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. I have a big cat presence on the internet.
Queen and Kiki.
I need to make them their own Instagram. Mm. I should. I really should. But they are my babies. They're my fluff babies. That was my other suggestion of what I could talk about was just my cats.
Well, we got to leave something for the sequel.
Yeah. Next time here. Yeah.
Always leave them wanting more.
And so you can hear me on a few things coming up. The only two most notable right now are I will be on the upcoming Circe podcast by Alex Talander of the Ostium podcast.
Yep.
Amazing.
Very excited for that to come into the world. And I am narrating audiobooks, and my first audiobook should be coming out soon. And it is the Light and Shadow series by Moira Katzen. And the first book is called Shadowborn.
Excellent.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Yeah.
That's how you read the title,
that
presumably.
Well, that's how I read the whole book.
Oh, great.
I definitely have to pick this up. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Emma, thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I love you guys. I love being here with you. Yay.
The feeling is super mutual.
Yay.
This has been No Bad Ideas. Produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Thanks. See you next week.